Welcome back. Last time we finished up talking about all the various emissions of a sexual nature that make us unclean, and now for something completely different. We're going to move on to Leviticus chapter 16, where we'll learn all about scapegoating. And the Lord spake unto Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they offered before the Lord and died. Now, you may remember that these two sons of Aaron were named Nadab and Abihu, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and they were killed, I think, by the Ark of the Covenant for using strange fire to sacrifice to Lord Yahweh, which I think means that they carried in burning embers from an unknown source rather than taking them from the altar as they had been instructed to do. Now, the AI that was in the Ark, if there was such a thing, may have interpreted this as a poison gas attack on Lord Yahweh or on whatever Yahwehian representative may have actually been present that day. And I think one was actually present that day because this verse says they offered before the Lord. It doesn't say they offered before a hologram of the Lord. It says they offered before the Lord. But sometimes the Lord was only a hologram, as is implied by this next verse. And the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto Aaron thy brother, that he come not at all times into the holy place within the veil before the mercy seat, which is upon the ark, that he die not, for I will appear in the cloud upon the mercy seat. Now, I think appearing in the cloud upon the mercy seat implies that sometimes the Lord was just a hologrammatic image rather than a physical presence. If he were always a physical presence, it would just say something like, I'll be sitting upon the mercy seat, instead of I will appear in the cloud upon the mercy seat. And you may be thinking, now wait a minute, if it's just a hologram, it can't very well be assassinated by poison gas. And you'd be right. For one thing, AIs can be pretty damn stupid. And for another thing, the Israelites may not have known that it was just a hologram and therefore couldn't actually be killed. So it could still be an assassination attempt, even if it was doomed to failure. Now, in such a case, the Yahwehian AI might well have thought it appropriate to set an example through the summary execution of the offending priests. I mean, humans are a pretty inferior species, after all, even if they do have some Yahwehian DNA. So what does it matter if the Ark bumps a few of them off? Thus shall Aaron come into the holy place with a young bullock for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. He shall put on the holy linen coat, and he shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh, and shall be girded with a linen girdle. And with the linen mitre shall he be attired. These are holy garments. Therefore shall he wash his flesh in water, and so put them on. And he shall take of the congregation of the children of Israel two kids of the goats for a sin offering, and one ram for a burnt offering. And Aaron shall offer his bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself and for his house. And he shall take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So again, before the Lord. So I think on this special occasion, the Yahwehian representative would have actually been physical present and not just have been a hologram. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. Now, these two lots, so-called lots, were two little wooden tiles with Hebrew words written on them. According to Ellicott's commentary, one title said, for Jehovah, and the other one said, for Azazel. Now, of course, Jehovah is just another way of pronouncing Yahweh. You know, there's that that conflation between the J's and the Y's and the V's and the W's and so on. And as usual, Yahweh is translated as the Lord in the King James Version. But what's this Azazel business? The King James Version translates Azazel as the scapegoat, but I'm kind of thinking they screwed up here, because Azazel is a proper noun, a name, just like Yahweh. And you may remember us mentioning the name Azazel way back in episodes 3 and 4 of sermons, if you've been with us that long. And if you haven't, you need to go back and listen to those too, because that was when we were studying the book of Enoch. Azazel was one of the leaders of the rebellious watchers who abandoned their posts on the moon base, or the mothership maybe, came down to Earth and paired off with Earth women. Because the Yahwehian Space Force didn't have enough female recruits to provide sexual partners for all the males. As a punishment, Azazel and the rest of his cohorts were banished to the wilderness and condemned to be covered by the rocks, which in that stupid Noah movie meant that they were portrayed as these giant rock-encrusted monsters. But I think it really meant that they had to live underground in caves and caverns, covered by the rocks, so to speak. And Aaron shall bring the goat upon which the Lord's lot fell, and offer him for a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord, to make an atonement with him, and to let him go for a scapegoat into the wilderness. See, this makes sense, because Azazel was banished to the wilderness, and presumably he would come out of whatever cave he was hiding in to get his goat, so to speak. Yeah, the poor goat. He probably thought he got off lucky, because instead of getting sacrificed to Yahweh, he was just sent packing off into the wilderness. But as you can see from the show art, the wilderness is a very inhospitable place. You know, check out the animal skeleton in the background. This poor little shaggy goat would have a hard time surviving, even if Azazel wasn't going to run out of his cave, jump out the bushes and grab him at some point. So who's the scapegoat here? Azazel or this little chubby goat? Well, chapter 10 of the book of Enoch said that the whole earth has been corrupted through the works that were taught by Azazel. To him ascribe all sin. That's a lot of blame there. So what exactly did he teach? Did his teachings lead to all the sin in the world, or was he just being scapegoated? Well, back in Enoch chapter 8, it had said that Azazel taught men to make swords and knives and shields and breastplates. You know, so the weapons that men use against other men. But it also says bracelets and ornaments and the use of antimony and the beautifying of the eyelids. So, also the weapons that women use against men. It's like in that Pokey Lafarge song, they'll win you with their eyes, then trap you in their thighs.
They will win you with their eyes, then trap you in their thighs. Stay away from love, stay away. Boys, far away, far away, far away.
So Azazel is responsible for the weaponry of both men and women, both masculine brute force and feminine wiles. So maybe he's not really that much of a scapegoat, although I have a hard time believing we wouldn't have eventually figured all this stuff out anyway. And And Aaron shall bring the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and shall make an atonement for himself and for his house, and shall kill the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself. And he shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from off the altar before the Lord, and his hands full of sweet incense beaten small, and bring it within the veil. See, that's the way you're supposed to do it. Take the burning coals from off the nice safe altar that's been monitored, rather than carrying strange fire in from outside that you don't know what it is. And that way, you don't incur the wrath of the gods, or the wrath of the ark, or the wrath of the alien AI, however you want to look at it. And he shall put the incense upon the fire before the Lord, and the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat that is upon the testimony, that he die not. And he shall take of the blood of the bullock, and sprinkle it with his finger upon the mercy seat eastward, and before the mercy seat shall he sprinkle of the blood with his finger 7 times. Then shall he kill the goat of the sin offering, you know, the one that got the for Yahweh tile, that is for the people, and bring his blood within the veil, and do with that blood as he did with the blood of the bullock, and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat and before the mercy seat. And he shall make an atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of the transgressions in all their sins. And so shall he do for the tabernacle of the congregation that remaineth among them in the midst of their uncleanness. And there shall be no man in the tabernacle of the congregation when he goeth in to make an atonement in the holy place until he come out and have made an atonement for himself and for his household and for all the congregation of Israel. And he shall go out unto the altar that is before the Lord and make an atonement for it, and shall take of the blood of the bullock and of the blood of the goat and put it upon the horns of the altar round about. And he shall sprinkle of the blood upon it with his finger 7 times and cleanse it and hallow it from the uncleanness of the children of Israel. And when he hath made an end of reconciling the holy place and the tabernacle of the congregation and the altar, he shall bring the live goat. You know, the one they call the scapegoat. And Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel, and all their transgressions in all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat, and shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness. Now this is kind of like they did with those pairs of birds, you know, in the previous episode. Remember, they would kill one and then release the other one after they sprinkled blood on it. So I guess there were scape birds as well as scapegoats, although it does seem like that this bird has a lot better chance of surviving than the goat does, because it can fly away from danger. And the goat seemed to know that too, because instead of just running away into the wilderness, he kept trying to get back to the camp, and it took a fit man to drive him away. I guess if he hadn't been fit, you know, he could have got around him. And the goat shall bear upon him all their iniquities into a land not inhabited, and he shall let go the goat in the wilderness. Now, Christians probably see a parallel between the scapegoat and Jesus Christ, who took upon himself the sins of the world and was then sacrificed. I don't know if he was sacrificed to Azazel, but he was sacrificed to atone for the sins of the world. And Aaron shall come into the tabernacle of the congregation and shall put off the linen garments which he put on when he went into the holy place and shall leave them there. And he shall wash his flesh with water in the holy place and put on his garments and come forth and offer his burnt offering and the burnt offering of the people, and to make an atonement for himself and for the people. And the fat of the sin offering shall he burn upon the altar. And he that let go the goat for the scapegoat shall wash his clothes and bathe his flesh in water, and afterward come into the camp. And the bullock for the sin offering, and the goat for the sin offering, whose blood was brought in to make atonement in the holy place, shall one carry forth without the camp, and they shall burn in the fire their skins and their flesh and their dung. And he that burneth them shall wash his clothes and bathe his flesh in water, and afterward he shall come into the camp. And this shall be a statute forever unto you, that in the seventh month, on the tenth day of the month, ye shall afflict your souls and do no work at all, whether it be one of your own country or a stranger that sojourneth among you. For on that day shall the priest make an atonement for you to cleanse you, that ye may be clean from all your sins before the Lord. It shall be a Sabbath of rest unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls by a statute forever. And the priest whom he shall anoint, and whom he shall consecrate to minister in the priest's office in his father's stead, shall make an atonement, and shall put on the linen clothes, even the holy garments, and he shall make an atonement for the holy sanctuary, and he shall make an atonement for the tabernacle of the congregation, and for the altar, and he shall make an atonement for the priests, and for all the people of the congregation. And this shall be an everlasting statute unto you, to make an atonement for the children of Israel for all their sins once a year. And he did as the Lord commanded Moses. And that's the end of chapter 16. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto Aaron, and unto his sons, and unto all the children of Israel, and say unto them, This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded, saying, What man soever there be of the house of Israel, that killeth an ox, or lamb, or goat in the camp, or that killeth it out of the camp, and bringeth it not unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, to offer an offering unto the Lord before the tabernacle of the Lord, blood shall be imputed unto that man. He hath shed blood, and that man shall be cut off from among his people. To the end that the children of Israel may bring their sacrifices, which they offer in the open field, even that they may bring them unto the Lord, unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, unto the priest, and offer them for peace offerings unto the Lord. And the priest shall sprinkle the blood upon the altar of the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and burn the fat for a sweet savor unto the Lord. Now, if you recall, they weren't allowed to eat blood or fat anyway. So this blood and fat sacrifice didn't really cost them anything. They got to keep the meat, you know, the lean meat that they were allowed to eat. And they shall no more offer their sacrifices unto devils, after whom they have gone a-whoring. This shall be a statute forever unto them throughout their generations. And thou shalt say unto them, Whatsoever man there be of the house of Israel, or of the strangers which sojourn among you, that offereth a burnt offering or sacrifice, and bringeth it not unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, to offer it before the Lord, even that man shall be cut off from among his people. And whatsoever man there be of the house of Israel, or of the strangers that sojourn among you, that eateth any manner of blood, I will even set my face against that soul that eateth blood, and will cut him off from among his people. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that maketh an atonement for the soul. Now, I don't know, but do you think that maybe the Yahwehlians saying not to eat blood because there's life in the blood meant that there were actual living things in the blood that might do you harm? ancient astronaut theorists say yes, at least this one does. Therefore, I said unto the children of Israel, no soul of you shall eat blood, neither shall any stranger that sojourneth among you eat blood. And whatsoever man there be of the children of Israel, or of the strangers that sojourn among you, which hunteth and catcheth any beast or fowl that may be eaten, he shall even pour out the blood thereof, and cover it with dust. For it is the life of all flesh, the blood of it is for the life thereof. Therefore I said unto the children of Israel, ye shall eat the blood of no manner of flesh, for the life of the flesh is the blood thereof. Whosoever eateth it shall be cut off. And every soul that eateth that which died of itself, or that which was torn with beasts, whether it be one of your own country or a stranger, he shall both wash his clothes and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the even, then shall he be clean. But if he wash them not, nor bathe his flesh, then he shall bear his iniquity. And that's the end of chapter 17. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, I am the Lord your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Neither shall ye walk in their ordinances. Ye shall do my judgments, and keep mine ordinances, to walk therein. I am the Lord your God. Ye shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the Lord. And now the Lord is going to warn against various types of incest and issue commands against them. None of you shall approach to any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. The nakedness of thy father or the nakedness of thy mother shalt thou not uncover. She is thy mother. Thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. The nakedness of thy father's wife shalt thou not uncover. It is thy father's nakedness. The nakedness of thy sister, the daughter of thy father, or daughter of thy mother, whether she be born at home or born abroad, even their nakedness thou shalt not uncover. So what he's saying here is that even if your sister or half-sister was born in another country, and you haven't been raised as brother and sister, you still can't get it on, because what matters is not the family relationship, it's the genetic relationship. It's the risk of birth defects and so on. I guess Greg and Marcia would be okay, since they don't really have a parent in common, they just got related by marriage. The nakedness of thy son's daughter or of thy daughter's daughter, even their nakedness thou shalt not uncover, for theirs is thine own nakedness. In other words, they have your genes, your DNA, passed down through your son or your daughter. The Yahwehlians understood this stuff, even if the Israelites didn't. The nakedness of thy father's wife's daughter, begotten of thy father, she is thy sister, half-sister. Thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. But I'm thinking, maybe she'd be okay if she was begotten by a different father. I don't know. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy father's sister. She is thy father's near kinswoman. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy mother's sister, for she is thy mother's near kinswoman. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy father's brother. Thou shalt not approach to his wife. She is thine aunt. Now, wait a minute. I'm having a little trouble with this one. There doesn't seem to be any genetic rationale for not doing it with your father's brother's wife. That must be strictly for the purpose of not causing conflict within the family. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy daughter-in-law. She is thy son's wife. Thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. You know, because that would cause conflict in the family. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy brother's wife. It is thy brother's nakedness. More family conflict. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter. I think this one's known as the Woody Allen commandment. Neither shalt thou take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter to uncover her nakedness, for they are her near kinswomen. It is wickedness. Neither shalt thou take a wife to her sister to vex her to uncover her nakedness beside the other in her lifetime. So you can marry your wife's sister if your wife died. But I think that this is saying that you can't marry two sisters that are still living. Although Jacob sure did that. He married both Leah and Rachel. And he later, you know, got his name changed to Israel, which is how the Israelites got their name. So, you know, there's a direct lineage here. But I guess, you know, this would have been an ex post facto law, you know, as far as he was concerned. So it wouldn't have applied to him. Also, thou shalt not approach unto a woman to uncover her nakedness as long as she is put apart for her uncleanness. And as we saw last time, that uncleanness could be due to her having an STI like chlamydia or gonorrhea, or, you know, it could just be due to her being on the rag. Moreover, thou shalt not lie carnally with thy neighbor's wife to defile thyself with her. You know, because that's not a good idea if you want to keep peace in the neighborhood. And, you know, I'm going to stop right here. Because the next verse, Leviticus 18:21, starts something new that's going to take a while to discuss. And we'll pick it up from that point next time at Leviticus 18:21. Until then, keep the faith, keep the peace in the family, keep the peace in the neighborhood, and keep away from any hot women that might share your DNA.